3, 2, 1, and live. So, well, what's up, guys, and welcome to another podcast of the John Seabolt Show. I am Jonathan Seabolt. I actually remembered to introduce myself. I made fun of myself the first week, or the second week, or second episode, whatever, but I finally did it. I am Jonathan Seabolt, and I have my buddy Harry on here, Harry Sands. He is from Louisiana. You literally just said before we started recording. Currently That's living right. in Grundy, Comic-Con connoisseur, toy connoisseur, a man of all kinds of nerdy goods and pop culture stuff.
Geekdom for sure.
Nothing wrong with that. So I think right off, just because it's fresh, you just went to a Comic-Con, correct?
I did. It was Pikeville's second annual. There was the second one ever at the Expo Center.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And it was a beautiful show. There was plenty of attendees, vendors. Mick Foley was there. Kane was there. Al Snow, the voice of Ash Ketchum from Pokemon, and also Bulbasaur, and she's been in countless other animes. I think her last name is Sands, like sand at the beach.
Okay.
Very famous voice actress. She was there. And a Yellow Ranger from one of the more lesser known Power Rangers was there. She's a very attractive girl, but I didn't know who she was.
Yeah, I knew it definitely wasn't the first one, because the girl that played Trini in the first Power Rangers
tragically passed away. Yeah, rest in peace.
But yeah, so that's cool. And I know that when you go, you don't just go as a fan of this stuff. You've set up as a vendor, right?
Sometimes? It's been a while since I've been able to play the role of vendor at a con. But thanks to my co-dad and indie author, Raymond G. Newsom, he had a booth, and he enlisted my help as someone who has run cons before by myself and on behalf of other people's products as a promoter. It was his first con ever as an author, and he wanted me to tag along to kind of, you know, most authors are maybe not as socially talkative to people face to face as what they have in their mind, and he needed someone like me, a mouthpiece.
Right. You're the Paul Heyman to his Brock Lesnar.
Pretty much. My client needed me at the table, and I served my client.
Heck yeah, man. That's really, really cool. Yeah, I saw Foley tweet a couple of pics.
He was so cool.
Did you have an awesome story to tell you? Yeah, go ahead.
I'll tell my Foley story, and then we'll give it right off the bat. I didn't have money to pay for a signature or take a picture with him, and he was making a very fair deal. He was doing $50 for both a selfie and a signature.
Yeah, that's cheaper from some of the higher end wrestling scales for sure.
Right. Kane, I think it was 40 a piece, one or each, you know, one or the other. Foley was doing both for 50.
That's not bad.
But I didn't have it. But, you know, I respected him. I waved to him from afar. He constantly had lines the whole day. You know, I respected his. But here's teardown. 7 o'clock rolls around. The show's over. The public is gone. Vendors are tearing their booths down. Everyone's getting ready to hit the road. A lot of people come from a very long way, and they have some traveling to do before they call it a night. Some are probably staying in Pikeville in a hotel, and they're going to hit the road the next day. Mm-hmm. But it's time to get out of there. The show's over, okay? And I'm walking out towards carrying a little bit of merchandise needs to go back in the vehicle for Raymond G. Newsom, the author. And here's Foley approaching me, and we're going to cross paths. So I had to say, at least, you know, I'm a fan. It's an honor to meet you. I've seen him wrestle, but I've never met him in a non-wrestling environment. So I had to say hi.
Right.
I wasn't going to pull my phone out and get in his face and say, can I have a pic? You know, I just said, hey, man, I just want to let you know. Huge fan. You're a legend. And I really hope that Holy Foley will come back to the network season 2. And he actually stopped and talked to me for like a minute or two. He's a busy guy. And I think his manager was actually managing that Yellow Ranger who I didn't know who she was. So he was making his way to her. And that's where we crossed paths. And he talked to me for like 2 minutes. And then he said, you know, have a good night. And, you know, I didn't want to badger him like a fangirl saying, can you care if I get a pic or can I throw you on my channel? You know, I didn't badger him. I just, you know, I have that memory that he spoke to me.
Right.
He could have easily brushed me off, and he didn't.
And that's actually, I feel like most celebrities and stuff, or whatever it may be, even though I'm sure they do love some of the aspect of being known, sometimes when you treat them like they're just a normal human, that goes a lot further than oh man, like even pulling out obscure stuff or something, showing how big of a fan you are, you know, showing a little bit of respect and humility towards them, I think goes human a lot decency. Further.
Human decency.
Yep.
That's I held him cool, and he spoke to me, and I'll have that memory. I'll never forget.
Yeah, man, that's really, really cool.
I may not have a video to prove it, but I know that he spoke to me, and he didn't have to, and it was very cool.
Yeah.
And I'm going to reveal on my channel when I do the upload about Foley what he told me about the status of Holy Foley. So there's a little teaser.
Nice. That's cool. Yeah, so you are just going into another thing. You do YouTube videos. You started out doing just a little bit of vlogging, and then you've kind of turned it into a very nice growing toy collector. I don't want to say antiquing, but you kind of search for
figs.
Those rare, huge figure collection, wrestling figures, and non-wrestling. And
figures saved my channel, Jonathan. I was running out of ideas. I was running out of content. I live in a very small town that you've been to. You can account. There's not a whole lot going on.
Grundy, Virginia. I don't know if I said that or not at the beginning, but yeah, Harry currently lives in Grundy, Virginia, which is about 2 hours or an hour and a half away from Bluefield, I should say. And it is very, very tiny. You're talking, when you hear people say, oh, my town has one stoplight and a gas station, that's literally just about Grundy.
It makes you, I'm sure, appreciate your town. I say when you visit these bigger areas and you go to Bluefield, you're like, man, Bluefield's so small. Coming to a place like Grundy is so eye-opening to the limitations.
Yeah.
Gas stations, even just basic service stuff.
Yeah. And Grundy, just to give you an example, which me and you met via, in a weird way, GameStop, because of Nate. Nate ran GameStop down there
GameStop's never going to leave you alone, bro. The connections, the networking of it.
Yeah.
For you could write a book about that alone, about how many connections that the job that you despise, the company, but the people that you met has been so rewarding.
Yeah, I absolutely, man. I don't like GameStop because of a whole bunch of different reasons. But at the same time, my entire adult life, for the most, almost, I would say 90% of the people I interact with, if not more, are people that I met through GameStop.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard. You know what I mean? I don't like a lot of the stuff that happened, but that was more from a professional level. I'm grateful for everything GameStop did as far as networking, friends, and all that stuff, for sure. So me and you met via GameStop by Nate.
Correct.
But
Kronk.
Yep.
Shut up, Kronk.
You know, but that GameStop and I vlogged it, and it's on my channel for anybody on my YouTube channel if you're listening to this on a podcast station, but I vlogged it. But that GameStop actually has since closed down. They couldn't, Grundy was that, had a hard time even keeping that open.
Yeah, the city of Grundy negotiation with GameStop corporate failed for the rental amount that they were going to agree on to renew the lease. They wanted too much, and GameStop just simply walked away. The store was expendable.
And that's sad for multiple levels, because it's one, it's sad because it takes options for shopping from customers, and then it also takes, as you know, which I plan on getting him on the podcast as well, but that put our good friend Bobby out of a job.
A job that he did so well.
Yeah, Bobby was great.
Nate and all the other past GMs of that store relied on Bobby's ability to run that place without any help. At any moment's time, people would call in, people would disappear. As you know who I'm referring to. Mm-hmm. People just wouldn't be there, and Bobby had keys, and he could be there, and the store would operate, customers were taken care of.
Yep.
And they had that reliability with Bobby.
Yeah, no, I agree, man, which I think he's like a cop now, isn't he? No, he works at a school, doesn't he? He's like an IT guy.
He's at the School of Law. It's one of Grundy's shining achievements, the Appalachian School of Law.
Yep.
It's actually the weird connection why I'm here, my family and myself, is because of the School of Law.
I don't know if I knew that or not.
Yeah, we're originally from Louisiana, as I said earlier, dislocated by Katrina in 05. We're coming up on the 13th anniversary of Katrina. My older sister and her husband were living in Grundy because he was finishing his law degree at the law school.
Okay. Here in Grundy.
And they were the only family we had outside of the state of Louisiana. My folks end up falling in love with Appalachia. Mm-hmm. And they didn't want to leave. They got a house here. They love the mountains. They feel very safe from hurricanes.
Right.
They're fine with them being very limited on store and shopping. They're retired. This is a retirement area.
Right. I can agree with that, man. And I guess I've always wondered, you know, it kind of goes into, I wondered, like, people from New York, when they take vacations, they're literally in a city that has everything. So when they take vacations, do they come to the areas like this where they're like, all right, I want to go to a place that has a hotel and then we can just hang. And so I guess, cause you live.
I'm close. Sure, you know, when I worked at the Brakes Interstate Park, I know a park that you find extremely beautiful that you visit yourself. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if it was Nate that took you there or whatever, however you ended up at the Brakes. And I know you're a fan of your Blue Ridge Mountains out there. There's some beautiful mountain range in your neck of the woods. I know. The Brakes is breathtaking. It's the largest gorge in the Eastern Hemisphere of the United States. And you'd be surprised how many people from New York and bigger places will come to the Brakes to see the Grand Canyon of the South.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I guess because I don't know what the word I'm looking for. You don't see greenery up there. It's the concrete jungle. It's literally concrete everywhere. So I guess
all everywhere. Yeah.
I guess that makes sense, man. It is weird. I wasn't at this, but you know how I've told you before that me and my buddy Stevie are really into like deathmatch wrestling and stuff, and they always have to do these in these very small towns just to not. You know, have like a big, yeah. And so he went, not this past one, but the one before that, I didn't go to it. And, there were some guys there from Philadelphia. They come because death matches are big, you know? And they were like, what do people do here? And it was like, this is even small for me. So I don't know, man. You know, that's what he was saying. Cause the town that show was in specifically has a red light. You turn right. There's three buildings. You turn right. There's a pizza place. That is it.
And they love that pizza place. Everybody knows each other. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows what they're going to order. There's no surprise in their orders.
Yep.
It's small town USA.
Yep. Now, another thing I know that we were talking about earlier, you're also a huge, which I'm going to get back to the toy stuff, but I'm just trying to touch a little bit of bases here. You're also a massive, massive, speaking of GameStop, gamer. You love games.
I love games. I don't play as much as I used to. As you know, life, adulting gets in the way of our passion.
Yep.
I'm sure you can attest now that you're a dad more than ever.
Oh yeah.
Finding the time, and then when you have the time, can you keep your eyes open?
Yep.
That's the challenge as you get older. But I love story-driven single-player games, honestly. Mm-hmm. Nothing against online gaming. I'm not very good at it. I know there's a market for it, but I love story-driven single-player games that are massive and take forever. That's my forte.
I agree. Because with online games, I feel like it's to the point where if you can't spend every waking hour, there's going to be a kid that's better than you, and then it's just not fun to play.
That's definitely a core issue that is yet to be solved by the game developers. Believe me, the idea of playing online goes back to, you remember the late 90s, Ultima was the first MMO. Mm-hmm. And that broke so many barriers that technology couldn't solve until that happened. And here we are all these years later, and look what we've evolved to. Fortnite is being played by tweens. It's on mass media. It's as mainstream as a game gets.
Right.
Epic paid top-notch research marketers to have this idea 5 years ago so they could implement it now.
Right.
Everything is done in an experimental lab situation and, you know, with these theory machines, what's going to work, what's going to sell. You know, the passion of playing a game for the pure enjoyment of escaping reality and then turning it off when it's time to handle your business is what I love.
No, I agree. And that's, that's kind of my issue with a lot of games today is I don't like, I understand. I actually had a conversation with my buddy Zach about this a little when I went to Greensboro for Raw. I stayed at one of my friend's houses down there, and I had a big conversation with him. But like my big complaint about games is everything is so simulation based that it's almost like you don't escape reality anymore. Like I can't pick up NBA 2K and play unless I understand how professional basketball plays work. You know what I mean? Like I miss picking up a game and just having fun. Wrestling games, dude. My God, right. You can't. I mean, unless you know what the crap is going, which for me as an avid wrestling fan, I do, but like you can't just pick it up and enjoy it anymore.
Well, that's probably why the New Japan license that looks like the old 16-bit era game.
Fire Pro Wrestling.
Like flourish people in our demographic, in our age group, married, old, parents, reality. Pick it up, play it, enjoy it, and when it's time to go to bed, you cut it off and you go to bed. Yep. The 2K product has just been, all the fun's been sucked out of that Yuke's engine. There's just, as pretty as of an image it can display, the core of the reason to play it is broken, and it's not fun to play.
Yeah, it's too simulation-based, man. Like, I can remember playing old wrestling games and being able to dive off of the SmackDown fist, which would never happen in reality, but...
Yeah, L2 would hop you on up there.
Yep, so, that's what I want. I want my video games to be...
Simplicity.
Yep, and it's just intuitive. Tough.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think Fire Pro Wrestling is going to be awesome. I actually have it. Mine's arriving Tuesday. I pre-ordered it from Amazon.
Congratulations, man. Looks fun. It's not on Xbox, so I'm being left out.
Yeah, it's good. Hopefully that the release of this can be, I think the issue is that the Xbox didn't sell well in Japan at all. Mm-hmm. And PlayStation did.
It's marketed the Japanese first, US second.
Yep. So we'll see how the selling of it goes on, which I've seen some bigger YouTubers, they've already got early copies and they're playing it, so hopefully that'll help. And I'd love to see the game sell well and get on the Xbox One and the Switch, and especially just to expose people to, you know, competition's not bad. We need competition. WWE needs competition in the gaming world. Madden needs competition. NBA 2K needs competition. Like, any of these games need competition because it's going to make them better. Like, it's going to make the other company say, we have to do something to hang with these guys.
Exactly.
So,
but yeah. THQ versus Acclaim in the 90s.
Yep. Man, I hated those Acclaim games.
Really?
The fighting game style, man.
I remember being floored by the custom build the creator wrestler customization options.
Yeah.
But after your character was made, it would suck to play him. It wasn't fun.
Yeah. Yeah, and there was no grapple function. Every move was just a button combo. I mean, it was literally a fighting game, but with wrestling guys.
And then you have your N64 memory card in your controller, so you were creating a bunch of cool-looking guys that you had no intention on playing because the game sucked.
Yeah.
But you love creating them anyway.
Yeah. There's always been this fascination with us and being able to create. Like, isn't that, like, I mean, I guess because the idea is, like, you want to put yourself in a game, but... It's always been funny. That's, and not even just wrestling based. I say that from everything. Like even Final Fantasy, man. I don't know anybody who played Final Fantasy that didn't change the characters' names when given. I know so many people who played, combine my words there, Final Fantasy VII, but changed Cloud's name to their own name or something.
Right.
So that
was a game changer game.
Yeah, that game,
are you PS4 guys ever going to get that so-called remake?
I refuse to believe. It's not like a legit argument, but there's a dude I work with that I'll always kind of tease about it, but I'm just like, it's never happening. He's like, it is,
supposedly,
man, it is.
You're going to get Kingdom Hearts 3, apparently.
But you know, man, I keep thinking about Kingdom Hearts 3, and I keep thinking to myself, do I really, really want it, or is it the nostalgia that's 13 years old at this point that's saying that I want it? Because Kingdom Hearts 2 released in 05.
So, yeah, that's a long gap.
Yep, and there's been 35,000 spinoffs, but there's two main games. So I don't know.
Yeah, point what? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
A whole bunch of them, man. And I did. I love the series, but I don't know if, like, the more I think about it, the more I don't know if I'm going to fully pick it up. I don't know if I'm going to pick it up because I don't
know.
Not
at full price. Catch it on, PlayStation sale.
Yeah, that's
nine-ish.
Yep.
Yeah, I love in my older age, and I'm quite a few moons older than you. I have found relevance in finding things below retail and sticking to that price point.
Oh, yeah.
I no longer. There was a time where if I didn't have a game the day it dropped, I felt like a failure, like as a gamer.
Right.
And that's the mentality of the machine feeds into us. And we were in that mindset.
Right.
You needed it day one. You needed that exclusive this day one. You need the guide. Now that I don't have the means to buy unnecessary things like I used to.
Right.
I have to buy stuff when it drops. And I'm cool with that.
Right.
Because it takes me so long to beat a game anyway. By the time I'm done working on the one I'm on, it's time to pick up one that I wanted a year ago and it's now half price.
Right. That's kind of, this is a weird time for me because I just picked up Shenmue. I just got it yesterday.
Oh, and I got so bad.
And I just got Fire Pro coming in. This is a weird time. I usually don't buy games. This is the first time I've bought two games probably over the course of 3 or 4 months, let alone a week.
You did good buying the physical copy. Just something about that. The era the game's from warrants you owning that physically.
No, I agree.
And here I am as someone who thought I was committed to digital only moving forward. I was done with disc. I was going to just keep housing them. On the Xbox, I don't know about PlayStation, they allow you to uninstall them and they just stay and I'm ready to install state.
Yeah, you can.
So you throw them on the hard drive when you want to play them. That's what I do. I don't have a big terabyte or 2 terabytes or an external.
Right.
I just stick to my 500 gigs. And when I want to play something I don't have room for, I install stuff that I'm not using, and it stays in the ready install state.
Yep, that's how it is on PlayStation, man. I've got so many things that are just basically in my cart and paid for that I just don't have, you know, installed or anything. But you know, I used to be really anti-digital movement because I thought it's just pure profit for the company.
A guy wanting a case, a manual, it goes on the shelf in order. With other games that tight. I was that way too, but going through Hurricane Katrina, I learned firsthand how replaceable and how redundant stuff is.
Right.
And the most important things in our lives are the people that love us and give us what no animate object is not going to give you.
Right.
And I learned, you know, now here's me, a figure collector. There's a lot of guys that literally have, you know, entire rooms devoted to their figures. I don't have that. I have one shell, and I have a few that are on card on the wall, but I can't afford to buy that many, and I don't have anywhere to put them. So I like to stay in the capacity I can collect.
Right. Well, a lot of your stuff, too, you buy a lot of your stuff at, like, flea markets and cons and stuff. You don't buy...
I love to be thrifty.
Yeah.
I have to. In order to be in this hobby, I have to thrift. There's a community of other collectors that love to trade amongst each other. Mm-hmm. Maybe someone got this and they're not feeling it anymore. A year ago, they loved it. Now they're not so much.
Right.
And they put it out there. Hey, who wants this? And what would you're willing to trade for? And you get something. You send an offer. It's either yes or no. It's up front.
Yep. I agree. Also, for anybody who's listening and not watching, he held up it was an Ultimate Warrior figure. But you're right, you know,
this is the defining moments one that they've retired this line Mattel has.
That was a cool series.
Yeah. I really love your Ninja Turtle WWE that you have. Wave one.
Yeah, I bought the first wave of those and I really, really loved them. But I think I'm just gonna leave it there. I don't
No need to get that wave two.
Yeah, you know, well, because the first wave, I feel like that was the start of it. You know, they were Comic-Con exclusives for a long time, and then it was a very limited release in stores. That's collectible. Now it's just, dude, I haven't been into a Walmart and not seen line two. You know what I mean? Like,
it's everywhere.
It's everywhere.
We call that in the collecting game, we call that peg warming.
It's,
this is the only Ninja Turtle I own.
Leonardo.
This is a Mega Blocks. They call them Mega Constructs figures.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get them in various fandoms now. Like, here's a Borg from Star Trek.
Okay. Yeah.
You can get them in various. You can get the Terminator. You can get He-Man. You can get Aliens. They have a couple of fandom licenses, and you can get these little small scale figures that don't take a lot of space.
Gotcha. Now, when you're collecting, like when you're going, like, what is the criteria for you? Are you looking for something that you think is eventually going to be worth something? Does that play into it, or is it just specifically?
There was a time where value of the toy was precedence for me, but not in this stage of my collection. No.
Okay, so you're just kind of collecting stuff that you want to now.
That I personally want for my own enjoyment, because honestly, I remember when episode one dropped, I was working for Sears Roebuck, and I opened up a box saying, do not open until May 1st, 1999. And this was April. This was before Easter. We got the stuff early. And here I'm looking at Darth Maul and Obi-Wan Young and right. episode one toys, okay? And I bought caseloads of these figures saying, oh, man, these are going to be so valuable getting the first one. And now literally episode one toys are in various comic book stores and toy resellers, and they're $5 tops.
Yeah.
They're cheaper than they were when I bought them at Sears in 99.
Yeah, they. I guess they loaded the market down on that.
And that's why I've given up the whole, you know, I want this for the value sake. I'm not knocking anyone who does that, though. That's their prerogative.
Right. It's just not number one for you.
I support you collecting, no matter what it is you collect, no matter how you want to collect it. There's people that get on other people's cases because they don't open their figs. They only leave them in the package. That's the collector's right to choose. Right. I'm not. Who am I to judge you for how you want to collect your toys?
Right. That makes sense, man. The one thing that I do think... I think is going to really hold its value, and I don't collect. I have a couple of them, but I know they're huge, and I think that a lot of it is because of what they are. I think the Pop Funko figures, because people are like, oh, they're today's generation's Beanie Babies, and I agree with that to an extent, but I think that the pop culture-ness of them and the fact that it's all stuff from movies and stuff are going to make them stick around longer than what Beanie Babies did. Because people are always going to be searching for Shining figures. People are always going to be searching for these cult phenomenons. And I think that is going to make them last longer than Beanie Babies.
There's a lot of fandoms and there's a lot of brands out there that have no action figure lines. And the Funko has opened a gateway to these obscure TV and movies that would have otherwise never been made into a toy.
Right.
And someone wants a physical something of a character that they identify with that brings them happiness. There's an awesome documentary on Netflix about the story of Funko. You need to check it out. It's called Making Fun.
Making Fun. Okay.
I highly recommend it. On a day that you're like light duty on the dad patrol and you have nothing else going on, put it on and do stuff in the background. Very interesting watch. It's called Making Fun.
Yeah, I'll check that out, man. Because I like...
Super interesting story. Very humble beginnings of Funko.
Yeah, because well, they didn't start as what they currently are, right?
Bobbleheads.
Bobbleheads, okay.
And tikis. Bobbleheads and tikis.
That's really strange.
Then they came out with the Pop, and the bobblehead community was like... It was 50-50. Some of them were like, these are great. And the other half was like, this is not a bobblehead. I'm not buying it.
Gotcha. Well, the thing is they kind of bobble. It's just not a true bobblehead.
Well, then you got to understand, some Funkos say figurine on the box. The ones that are not bobbles. Like, Star Wars Funkos are bobbleheads because Hasbro owns the rights to make Star Wars figurines.
Gotcha.
Funko's way around that was, can we make Star Wars bobbleheads? They made Pop bobblehead Funkos.
Wow.
To get around Hasbro's license.
Holy crap. Okay. Does it talk about this in that documentary?
It does.
Cool. I'm going to check that out because that sounds...
I highly recommend it. You and your wife would get a lot of enjoyment. And there's a lot of... They've encountered a bunch of legal pitfalls and licensing problems and... They've been hit a lot over the years, but they are a well-oiled machine now. They opened that headquarters in Seattle. The first floor is a shop for the public. And then the rest of the floors are actual where they come up with the ideas and get them produced.
Man, that's... What a crazy line, man. And it's like... Anybody could have thought of that. That's where you always kick yourself. You're like,
you're gonna love the story of the CEO they have now is not the one that started it, but the one that started it recently came back to the company, but for a different role, and that's all explained in the documentary. You will love it. You have to watch it.
Yeah, I'll check it out because we're not watching a lot now. We just finished up Parks and Rec a few weeks ago, and we're watching. We're currently going through Gilmore Girls.
Well, my wife loves that.
It's not bad, dude. Like it's. I've watched a lot of weird shows, man. Like I watched Golden Girls with her, which I love. I think Golden Girls is fantastic.
My wife loves that too.
But
Gilmore Girls. I have older sisters, so I grew up in a household when we had just one TV. Big sis was still awake. She had control of the remote. And my brother and I couldn't do nothing about it because she was taller than us, stronger than us.
Nice. That's
so cool. We watched a lot of Golden Girls.
Nothing wrong with that, man. It's a solid show. I know, obviously, you're a huge wrestling fan. I'm trying not to talk a ton about wrestling in this episode because...
Because you do wrestling content with your homie, I know.
But do you watch any kind of MMA or anything like that, or are you just strictly
wrestling? I will tell you about my introduction to MMA, and that is UFC 1, renting it at Blockbuster Video, and it was for mature audiences only, and getting that VHS and just putting that and just seeing this insane world. Like, this is the late 90s.
Right.
And seeing little bitty Roy.
The UFC was founded like 93, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's old. Mid 90s. Yeah. I mean, Royce Gracie, so much smaller than Ken, tapping Ken to buff Shamrock out with his gi. Yeah, the fact that they didn't adhere to weight classes in those years.
Yeah, that's what I missed.
It was savage, bro. It was really, to us, it felt like the Street Fighter tournament for real. You know what I mean?
UFC started in November 12th, 1993. Which is weird because didn't WWE start? Not WWE, but didn't Raw start late November? No, this started in January of 93.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. But yeah, that's it's. I do love the idea. I mean, I'm not an MMA fan. I don't hate MMA in any means. And when I say that, I mean I don't watch it.
Me either.
I love combat sports, and I think I would really get into it. I may try to. I've been talking to a couple people about different ways to watch it and stuff. But I do. Part of me does love that old school, because I have seen a bunch of old ones. I actually have a bunch of old ones on DVD that my buddy Sean, who ultimately he ended up fighting in the UFC, he let me borrow.
Yeah, I've heard you speak about him. He's one of the most famous people from Bluefield, right?
Him and Ahmad Bradshaw, who was won two Super Bowls with the Giants. Yeah, they're both from Bluefield. But yeah, you know, I love my dryer's going off. I hope that doesn't pick up in the microphone. But I... that's the cool thing about live shows, I guess. But I love the concept of not having weight classes to an extent. I still want it to be safe. I don't want. Well, you know what? I don't care if some dude who's 300 pounds and some dude who's 125 says I will fight him willingly. Let him have at it, man. they didn't have the restrictions on the gloves. Like they didn't have to be a certain ounce or anything. Like there, it would just. It was just, it was just a fight
club. It was savage, dude. It was human cockfighting, exactly as they would advertise it.
Yep. But,
groin shots, completely legal, over and over again.
Yep. But part of me, I also understand the safety issues, and because it's already a super dangerous sport. So sure. I can understand the weight classes and the safety rate. Kind of like, the NFL. Now, I don't agree with most of the stuff the NFL does now with the rules that they're implementing for safety. I literally was watching a preseason game the other day and a guy got tackled and they flagged him for unnecessary roughness. I hate that crap because it's a contact sport. But also at the same time, the guy lowered his head. I kind of understand the safety. But that's a whole different topic, I guess. So, but I don't know. I want to get into the UFC more, or Bellator, or I guess somebody got bought out, wasn't it? See, that's how out of the loop on... I'm going to stop talking about the UFC because I don't want to sound like an idiot to anybody listening.
Before you do, I do want to mention that the early 2000s, I was all about Pride FC.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Pride was amazing entertainment, buddy.
They had a game. Do you remember that?
The Pride game? Yeah, very...
PS2.
Yeah, awesome graphics. Kazushi Sakuraba.
I remember. I think Shamrock was in it.
He might have been. But Kazushi Sakuraba was a Japanese fighter that they gave him the title the Gracie Killer.
Whoa!
Because he kept beating Gracies.
Wow.
Yeah, but then they put him in the ring with the bald guy Silva.
Mm-hmm.
And Silva cleaned his clock in like the first round.
Wow, Vanderlei Silva.
Gracies just don't fight like Silva though. He's an animal.
Dang.
In those years, in the beginning of the 2000s, Silva ran Pride like he dominated.
That's cool, man. Yeah, I knew he was getting older now. I didn't.
Oh, he's so old now, see, bro.
I have some memories of some earlier UFC stuff like that. I remember a fight. I think it may have been Silva, maybe Silva. And if you watched it in that time period, you may remember this. There was a guy that had the fangs.
Arlovski.
Russian. I remember he was in an arm bar. I keep thinking it was Silva, but I don't know. Dude, he picked him up, and you could literally see his arm. It didn't snap super gross, but you could see the bone in his arm physically snap out of an arm bar because he was trying to pick him up with one arm. Man, it was so brutal.
Yeah. Arlovsky's era is kind of like right before UFC became such a commercial machine thing. That's when it definitely became more, Fox had just acquired the rights to show them, and now Fox doesn't.
Right.
Which leads to why Fox needed to purchase the rights to show SmackDown, because they're missing a combative sport. So
is FS1 not Fox Sports?
It is. They're still showing you UFC?
I think so.
They used to show it, I don't know who has the rights. Well, we're both out of loop on MMA. Let's just not say because we don't know.
Yeah,
I'm too lazy to fact check it.
Somebody will say these guys don't know what the crap they're talking about. Which is not.
We'll just stop it there.
That's funny, man. Okay. So let's go. All right, we'll just switch gears here. So your YouTube channel, like I said, you you started out doing some vlogging stuff.
Yeah.
And then you jumped into the figures, and you said that the figures saved your channel. What kind of growth and stuff did you... Well, because I know just looking at it, I know that your channel seemed like it grew exponentially when you started doing the collecting stuff.
It gave me an audience, and I don't know if it's a growth because other people in the field... It's a very money-driven topic to YouTube about toys.
Right.
And there are people who have the means to buy these things as they're released, entire waves, cases... The more elaborate hot toys, I'm not sure if you know what a hot toy is. It's a 1/12 scale figure that basically looks like a doll. It has cloth uniforms. They are anywhere from $300 to $400 each.
Some of these guys probably get them sent to them for free, too.
Well, I mean, the bigger ones do get, Hasbro will send them. Like, for instance, the Infinity War wave of Marvel Legends and say, would you mind reviewing these products on the channel? And keep them as our compliment for doing the review. Sure. There is a commercial success for toy tubers, as they call themselves. And there's quite a few that are at the 200,000-ish. That's as big as they've gotten.
That's still crazy, though, man.
No one has gotten bigger than that, though. No one's more mainstream than the number one toy tuber on YouTube is a guy called Shardimus Prime. He made his name doing Transformer reviews.
Now, also, just to be specific, we are talking specifically like action figures and stuff, because I know some of the kids' toys stuff have gotten huge.
Oh, yeah. This would be adult collectors, toy tubers, yes.
Yeah, so we're talking... So
children toys is just phenomenal.
Yeah, I was going to say, so for anybody listening who's like, oh, no, there's bigger. No, we're talking specifically like action figures.
Adult collectors.
Yeah. Well, what is your channel at now?
I'm at 407.
Hey, man. I remember the 50 subscriber celebration, so you've come a long way.
I did a little video about, thanking for 400. Really just thanking for those who come, and it's never, ever 400. It's 40. It's 60.
Yeah.
It's 55. the people that watch my content, I appreciate it. And as long as I have one person who's commenting and keeping me engaged, I'll make content.
Yeah. It's YouTube is a very tough business, man. It wore me out, dude.
You got burned out.
I did. And that's even coming from, I've received two paychecks from YouTube. Nothing substantial, obviously, but even with getting paid, you would have to pay me a bunch of money to try to rely on that as my normal income. There's just too much stress involved, man. I love content creating and stuff. But man, it's just, it's taxing. It's very, especially doing it regular. I've actually really fallen in love with doing these podcasts because I love just talking to people, and I think everybody has a story and people like to listen to stuff. So I've kind of found a little bit of a home with these, podcasts and stuff, and it feels natural, but I also don't have to worry about, I don't want to edit stuff to make it sound different. I want to literally, as soon as I stop recording, I'll upload this. No editing, none of that stuff, man. Just have true, unedited, raw audio or video or whatever, just to, normal human being type stuff, man. And it's made it a little bit easier, but you're right, dude. If you have 430 subscribers and you're getting 50 views, I've got 1,400 and I might get 35 or 40. YouTube is weird. They don't promote, because the thing is, they don't promote now. They don't promote your channel, even if somebody subscribed to you. I have a girl. There's a girl named Adrian who I'm friends with, and she would watch my stuff. And then she started sending me messages like, "Did you not upload today?" And I was like, "Well, yeah." She would show me a screen cap, and she would go to my channel, and my video was not even on my channel for her. And how are you supposed to grow?
No. Yeah, the algorithm is brutal, and keywords play such a major role. I do want to say, now that I'm in this situation where I can talk to you personally, thank you for taking me under your wing in the beginning and giving me the tips you did.
Oh man,
whether I knew at the time I needed those tips or not, I just wanted to tell you thank you.
Oh man, I'm always down for helping people. I didn't invent YouTube, and I'm not successful by any means.
Bobby and you both did that for me in the beginning before I was even 100. And I just want to let you guys know it means a lot to me, because for me, it's a hobby. It'll probably never be a job, and I still have fun with it. And it makes the collecting. It's fun to have other guys like myself and other gals. Don't let me stereotype this as a male only hobby, because there are female action figure collectors too.
Right.
Customizers. They have these different sects of collectors, like you have the customizers and you have the men on card guys and you have the ones that open them and they take photo, the photography guys.
Yeah.
It's called Articulated Comic Book Art, ACBA.
Okay.
Big underground following of action figure 1/12, 1/6 scale photos with figures. And you take them to the point that you cannot tell that figure is not it. The scale of the photo makes it as if that figure's in a real world setting. It's not
right,
like the Ant-Man effect. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no. I see what you're saying. I think it's interesting to me, and I'm actually that's another reason I was glad that you jumped on, because I'll talk to you on Facebook Messenger occasionally or whatever, but we don't get to actually just physically sit down and chat. So it's really interesting hearing this stuff. But, as far as the collecting goes, it goes with anything, you like the idea of, and I'm not saying you as in you as in everybody, likes the idea of sharing what you're doing with other people. And if you can bring enjoyment to somebody doing that, why not?
Mm-hmm. The community is like any community. There are good and bad apples. There are people who are out there to rip people off on trades all the time that present false addresses, and they take photos of inventory they don't have, and they make deals, and money is exchanged on PayPal, and then products are never shipped.
Right.
There are bad apples in this community just like every other.
Right.
But when you find the right bunch of folks, I'm just going to say folks, and you know each other, you trust each other, you have 2, 3, 4 trades under your belt with someone, and then you pass that information along to someone who asks, hey, is this guy trustworthy? And I gladly say, yes, I completed 4 trades with them. Everything that we promised each other went through smoothly. In fact, he included extras that I didn't know I was getting. That's the kind of reports we give each other within the figure community.
Right. Keep each other honest and stuff. That way people don't move off. Because, I mean,
that way the ones that are trying to take advantage of people, their reputation, once it's found out that you rip someone out, they let everyone know this person under this profile picture posing from this city is a scammer.
Right. And that happens, I'm sure, more than not. I don't want to say more than not, but that probably happens way more than it should.
It's more regular than it should be, for sure, but that's life, right?
Yeah. Do you get anybody, like, when they watch your YouTube videos or anything, does anybody comment on them and say, oh, I'll trade you for this? Have you ever made trades that way?
I've been asked a few times. It doesn't happen often because I'm buying older stuff, used, like Goodwill quality used, a played with toy. I'm not one of these guys that can afford to get the newest thing the day it hits the stores.
Right.
So it doesn't happen often, but I have been approaching my comment section about items that I found that are kind of like jewels hiding in flea markets that I find.
Well, that's cool. That's really, really neat. It seems like it'd be a really, really cool, industry to get into.
You're somebody that's no stranger to being in a thrift store environment. You love the possibility of finding something that may not be valuable to somebody else, but to you, it's either going to give you nostalgic value, or it's something you could use, or it just makes you happy.
Yep. No, man, it's really, really good. Actually, maybe sometime you can come up on a weekend and
I would love to.
We'll go to Snooper's Antique Mall down the road here.
I've seen it on your channel a handful of times when you've gone. Yep. It would be an honor to go there with you, for sure.
Yeah, man, we'll set that up for sure. I had something else I was going to talk to you about, but I don't remember what it was. I made notes. I know that you're also a big movie and TV fan. Anything recently that you're watching?
I kind of gave you a hint earlier, but Disenchantment, the new show by Matt Groening, the creator of The Simpsons.
Right. Yeah, because I haven't watched that. Yeah, it's
so funny, and the first time ever, unlike Futurama and Simpsons, Disenchantment follows an actual main plot running in the background. Each episode has got a background mainline story. So even though each episode is a contained episode, there is a major thing they're building to that didn't exist in The Simpsons or Futurama.
See, I would be interested to watch that. I'm actually pretty opposite when it comes to Matt Groening, or Grant, however you say his name. I prefer
Groening.
Yeah, I prefer Futurama to I don't dislike The Simpsons. I love The Simpsons. But sure. Something about Futurama, man, always got me. I love Futurama so much.
He could tell finer plots and better writing, and he just had more of an open canvas with Futurama. That level of upgrade that Rama was to Simpsons is what Disenchantment is to Rama.
And you said it's on Netflix?
It's only on Netflix.
Yeah, I'll have to check that out. Netflix produces a lot of really
original
stuff.
It's 10 episodes long. They are 1 hour each. They are very entertaining. The voice actors are top notch. I will say, what's his name? The guy that's the voice of Bender. He's the king in the show, so you do hear him regularly. It's a comforting voice. Another noteworthy voice actor is Eric Andre from Adult Swim.
Okay, yeah.
He's the voice of the little demon character who looks like a cat. He goes by Lucy. And then there's a little elf character that looks like a little green Bart Simpson. He is called Elfo. I don't know who his voice actor is, but he's good, whoever he is.
Nice. Yeah, well, voice acting can make or break a show for sure.
Except, all the voice acting, superb.
Except the only thing I'm really okay with terrible voice acting, just because of the memory of it just now from buying the game, Shenmue had some of the worst voice acting.
Oh, yeah. Yes, but
that game,
it's part of that error. The undertaking, the balls on Suzuki to attempt such a massive epic adventure with the technology available to him and still deliver the story with as much detail as it had.
Yeah.
I felt like I traveled to Japan, but I've been to China.
Yeah,
in the 80s.
Here's a fun fact about Shinmu. I never beat it.
Never.
Well, here's
one.
Here's the problem. Every time I would play it, I would play it up to the point of where you got your job in the dockyard driving that forklift.
Looking for sailors.
Yep. I would go to work, collect my paycheck, go to the arcade, play Space Harrier, the QTE events, all that stuff, go sleep, wake up, do it again tomorrow. That's literally, I got to that point and I couldn't stop this endless cycle of going to the in-game arcade and playing games and trying to collect the quarter machine stuff. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Trying to get money for that. Like, I never progressed past that point in the game.
Cat. Well, that's unfortunate. Well, now you have the opportunity now that you have remastered.
Yeah, I'm gonna attempt to limit myself on that, because I think at the time, in my opinion, I think Shinmu is really far advanced for its time.
Sure.
Now it's not open world I also, for people listening versus watching, I just did the air quotes because it's technically an open canvas, but it's not in the realm of like Grand Theft Auto or anything.
Right.
But the freedom that game gave you outside of the idea of a mission you were in is that has to be for a 3D game like that, and not like over the top GTA style stuff. Like, that's got to be one of the first times that a game has had that kind of freedom.
I'm excited to hear about what do you think of it when you beat one and you start two.
Yeah, I'm excited to play it.
You never played two then, did you?
Nope.
Because you never beat one.
Yep. But it leads me to believe that one is kind of open-ended and doesn't really fully solve what you're after.
It isn't. So. Yeah, you get a little bit of answers, but not what he needs. So the way, and then two picks up right where one leaves off. Very cinematic.
Good.
And the exploration, we're very similar in our taste of exploration games, like Ocarina of Time, Skyrim. We love big open areas, and Shenmue gave us that in an era where that was almost infallible.
Yeah.
On the level of detail, the fact that the NPCs had their routines every day, they went out of their homes, they went to the store. I think stuff, little details like that just made me, the immersion.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was, that game, when I first played, I didn't own it. My buddy Evan had it, and I remember going to his house and playing it.
And he's the one that lives in Japan now, right,
Evan? Yeah.
How amazing.
I should ask him. I should be like, I need a full detailed description of Shinmu versus what it's like living
in Japan. Dude, in your skit days, you know, didn't you have a video about video game logic and reality?
It's actually one of my bigger videos, yeah. I had video game logic in real life.
I'm sure Shinmu had to play some.
Dude, Shinmu is so
navigating the interiors of the houses and stuff.
Dude, the control, even now, and I'm honestly glad they left it. The controls are still kind of clunky, but if they were perfect, it wouldn't be Shinmu. Just like if they redid the voice acting and stuff like that, it wouldn't be Shinmu. Part of Shinmu's allure is how almost not good of a game it is while being an amazing game.
Right.
It survived. I assure you,
the story is so gratifying, and my heart was just filled with joy when they announced how many years ago, 2 years ago, that 3 was in the works.
Yeah. I figure the success of part 1 and 2 and seeing how many people wanted to was it a Kickstarter thing?
It was.
So I'm sure seeing the success of that, they were like, all right.
And it met its goal in 3 days.
That rules, man. I'm happy to have it, man. It's one of my, I miss the Dreamcast, though. The Dreamcast is my favorite system, and it's not even because of particular stuff, but it's just, I never had a bad time playing a Dreamcast game.
That was the games that you crave now. You put them in and you played them. There was no tutorial. There was no simulation element. The Dreamcast was about having fun immediately, And you can, when you were done playing Crazy Taxi, when you're playing Dynamite Cop, where you're playing Sega Bass, whatever it was easy to get into it and play it. And then when it was time to do something else, you turned it off and you went about your business.
That's kind of the thing. Like, I miss games. I love sitting down and playing games for hours. Love it. But there's also games.
That time anymore.
There's also games I want to turn on and play for 20 minutes. And the Dreamcast, I could do that. I could play three rounds of Crazy Taxi.
Right.
And then go on about whatever I needed to do.
It brought the end of the 90s, early 2000s, pardon me, era arcade room to your house.
Yep.
Absolutely. Because you had Soul Calibur, arcade, superior, not perfect, superior. You had Dynamite Cop. You had the NFL Blitz game, whatever the NBA equivalent to that was. And everything that you had in the arcade that was running on the AM engine, Dreamcast did it better on the house. So.
You remember Power Stone?
Oh, yeah. Fun with four people.
Yep.
That rivaled Smash Brothers, honestly, in playability and longevity. Yeah. You would be like, you guys want to play something else? Or be like, you leave Power Stone in there because I'm winning this time. And you go back in there.
Yep. It's and that's a game that's grown on me the older I get. I used to not be like a huge – I didn't dislike it, but it's just – it's grown on me a lot.
Marvel versus Capcom 2, man. NBC, I can't tell you how many blisters on my thumbs. That Dreamcast controller. I hated the controller. It was so uncomfortable.
Oh, man, I love the Dreamcast controller.
Oh, it tore my finger up, dude. I couldn't handle it. The D-pad was atrocious. Yep.
And the one thing that I really, really loved about it, and I know that – which I don't – you don't do a lot of sports gaming. I mean, like, yeah, I didn't think so. So the NFL games, the NFL 2K series had a thing where you could call plays from your VMU so the player you were playing against wouldn't see. And now they have a thing where you can just hold a button and it'll pick the play and then you can move it around. But, like, full total secrecy to what you were doing was on that little VMU.
Your buddy sitting right next to you couldn't tell what was coming.
Yep. Because you can always look at the four plays on the screen and say, okay, he's either running right or it's going to be a pass play. So you can stack the side or do whatever. Like, on that, man, it was just like, I mean, it was just brilliant.
The VMU was an amazing memory card.
Sonic Adventure, you could take the chows on the go.
Yeah, I had my black one. Had a black controller and a black VMU, and I loved them to death. I would take the VMU to work with me or wherever I was. I would keep it and check on the virtual pet and stuff. Yeah, it was neat. The batteries didn't last long.
Oh, man. I don't remember ever starting my Dreamcast up and not hearing that high-pitched squeak telling you your battery was low. But that was part of the brilliance of it.
Innovation, man. Sega's innovation.
And 56K internet. I never played the first game that had a lag.
Well, I remember SegaNet. You remember they offered their own ISP?
I don't remember that, actually.
I signed up for SegaNet. I was living in Louisiana at the time, of course, and I racked up a cool $600 phone bill the month that I said yes to SegaNet. Because they were using out-of-area numbers to connect me. And Bell South was our actual provider in Louisiana. And my parents get this fat $600. And I had to pay every bit of that over the summer. Mowing lawns, doing chores for mom and dad. Like, I paid, and, you know, I'll never forget that SegaNet $600 phone
bill. That's crazy, man. Dude. That's nuts. I didn't have anything like that. I paid my dial up was like $15. I had a company called Sunlit Serve. One of those, but I can remember. I mean, just the hours that I would spend on Phantasy Star Online or anything.
Like I that. Loved on that. There was no chatting. All you had was the emoticons.
Yeah. And they would bleep words if you were to try to do something too. But you could send messages and you collected. Do you remember you had the? I don't remember what they were called. They were cards. They're basically like little address cards that would have your person. So you could get online and pull cards to see which one of your friends were online and stuff.
I didn't know that. I didn't get that deep into it because I couldn't find anyone to play with.
Dude, it was so good, man.
It was a beautiful game, though, for its time.
Yep.
The colors, the setting, the simplicity of the battle system.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Yep. And, man, you could play that game forever. Well, I know that on the PC, there's still people, they've made servers to play
servers.
On the PC. So people are still playing Phantasy Star Online.
That's awesome.
And that actually comes from, I never played any of the Phantasy Star games. I never played Phantasy Star 1, 2, 3,
or 4. Single player ones, right? Mm-hmm. Me either.
Yep. Which I had them on that Genesis. They
say that was Sega's answer to Final Fantasy, but.
Nah.
You're a big Final Fantasy guy, though, right?
To an extent. I actually never beat 7.
Did you play 15?
No. No. Hmm. I've played 7, 8,
10. I hope you played 10.
Yeah, 10. Which here's the thing. I haven't beat a lot of them. I'll tell you my story about Final Fantasy 7, though. So, my buddy Evan. That's how a lot of my early stories start, especially with gaming. But my buddy Evan, I would go to his house, and he was like, and he would play it, and I was like, this game looks amazing. So, also, I apologize to anybody listening. I'm getting over a cold. That's why I'm sniffing and stuff. So I would go, and I started playing, right? Set me up a character and all this stuff. So I'm 30 or 40 hours in. I'm getting on disc 2. Everything's great.
Mm-hmm.
Memory card corrupts. And I said, nope.
That was done.
And I've recently tried to go back and play it, and I played it a little bit. And it's still, honestly, to this day, fantastic. It holds up, plays perfectly. It's still, for its, today, it's still a beautiful game. Like, thinking about what it did for its time.
Yes.
But, man, it's just, it's, that was... That'll take it out of me having to do, like, and the thing is people are like, well, if you beat it, you would have played it again. Yes, I would. But it's just the way that it ended for me and just having that memory card corrupt and having to go through it again before I can get to the ending is just frustrating.
I haven't played one since 12.
I didn't like 12.
I thought that the judges were, like, really neat.
I think I played it for about 8 hours, and I was like,
it kind of played like an offline MMO, really.
It reminded me a lot of, like, I mean, it was a real game.
I was getting over my Warcraft addiction when I played. It was a crutch for me,
mm-hmm,
playing 12, because I had been addicted to World of Warcraft for 5 years straight.
Right.
And I gave it up, and I needed something to fall back on.
Right.
And I started playing 12. It was old then when I started playing it in like 2010 on a PS2. And then I upgraded and got a PS3 and never finished it. But I played halfway through 12 and really enjoyed it.
See, I'm not a big fan of that battle system. Like, here's this will get every person in the world mad at me. But, like, I'm not a big fan. Sorry. I'm not a big fan of the battle system. I love the stories and stuff, but I'm not a big fan of the battle systems of Knights of the Old Republic.
Mm-hmm.
I thought Mass Effect 3 had a terrible battle system.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like that real-time element where if I shoot something in the head, but the percentage is just a slight... Like, I have a percentage. I can aim and shoot directly for this thing's face, but mm-hmm, I still may miss it even though the bullet goes right through it because of percentages of hit. And I understand why, but if that's the case, I would just rather it be a turn-based system.
Mm-hmm.
Which I guess is the argument people hate about turn-based. Oh, you swing and it goes right through them. But I mean, it's just, I guess from where turn-based I played before I played real-time type of stuff, I'm not a big fan of that. Which I did like World of Warcraft and stuff, but I just, ultimately, it's not my favorite battle system, and it can take me out of a battle system. Or out of a game, I'm sorry.
What did you, what class were you in Warcraft? What was your favorite?
The only thing that I can remember playing is, I never got too deep into anything. I played a gnome.
Mm-hmm. Warlock.
I don't remember if it was is there a warrior class?
Yeah.
Dude, it's been so long. I can remember.
Gnomes could be warriors.
The hilarious thing is, and I know my buddy Gabe listens to the podcast. I can remember, I'm sure before I even say this story, he knows exactly what I'm going to say. But I can remember him coming in, and I had hit like level 19 or 20. I didn't make it much past that. I think I hit 22 one time. And I was like level 19, and he was like, hey, because I was like, man, I'm still having trouble. What is going on? And he was like looking at my gear and stuff, and he was like, well, hey, I noticed that you still have level 1 daggers. And I was like, I've not found anything. Like, I don't know what's going on, man. So I wasn't very efficient or good at it, but it was fun, talking to people and stuff like that.
I let the addiction of it take a hold of me. After Katrina, I really let myself get lost in it because I was in a new small rural town, culture shock. I had temporarily gotten away from a bunch of responsibilities I had at the time. I was 25 and I was certainly free, like nothing chaining me down. So I could literally just play Warcraft day and night.
Right.
Sleep all day and play Warcraft all night because I was on a West Coast server. And I really was living my life in reality just so I could function in Warcraft. I was thriving in Warcraft and I was doing nothing for the real me and everything for my avatar.
Hey, man, I know a lot of people that have quit their jobs because of Warcraft. I know a ton of people that it fully took over. And I think games are great, and I love that they can make people escape reality, but there's a lot of negative. And I think the thing is because Warcraft is never ending. I mean, I guess it technically does, but there's really always something new you can do. Or new people you can play with or whatever.
The fact that it's still online and what? They're approaching their 14th year. 14 years.
Yeah, I think it had come out a year or two. I started GameStop in 2005 and it was already out.
Yeah, it was out for 1 year. It came out in 2004.
So that's crazy, man. And yeah, it's still on, still going strong. I think they're getting ready to release an expansion.
It's out now, the Battle for Azeroth. It's really putting the orcs versus human Alliance versus Horde back in the... They've been collaborating together these last few expansions. Uh-huh. Now they're doing the whole, like, by the way, we hate you. So that's really the emphasis on this new one. And I'm just fascinated. I still, to this day, love Blizzard's lore that they make. I think it rivals that of Tolkien. Their lore is just phenomenal for Warcraft.
Right. I think... I've enjoyed everything I've seen or whatever. I think it's a very fascinating thing. I do struggle a bit to get into fantasy related stuff. And I think a lot of it has to do with names and stuff. Like it's hard for me to wrap my head around fantasy sounding names.
I find that hard to believe because you're a D&D guy.
Well, I do love D&D. I don't play it near as much as I wish I could, and I just it's hard for me to commit a lot of times, and because the guys that I play with play it every week, and ideally I would love to, but it's just it. I know it sounds like an excuse.
The schedule.
It is hard for me to do. And Gabe has told me he's like, well, you know, try to do an off campaign here or there and stuff, and I do like it, but I still struggle with that. Like, there's a lot of times when somebody will say a name if I am playing, which I haven't played in a long time, but. That I'll still be like it'll, you know, what is that from? Where is that? I've always struggled, and it doesn't make any sense because I can tell you any fact about wrestling from now to 1970. But I can't, you know what I mean? Like it's just how your brain.
There's only so much junk we can keep up there in the archive. Yeah,
like I saw a dude the other day complaining about wrestling and talking about how wrestling's so much more dangerous, and without even thinking, and this happened, I think, before I was born, but I was like, didn't Tommy Rich get thrown into the ropes and have his neck break in half? Why can I remember that? That's happened before I was even born, but yet I can't remember insert fantasy name. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's weird.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just always the way, I've always struggled with that. Like, I love Lord of the Rings, but if you were to say some of the names, I probably wouldn't know who in God's name you're talking about.
And that's totally understandable, and that doesn't make you any less of a fan than someone who's going to judge another person for not knowing every detail off the tip of their tongue.
Right.
You, people who like to rule over other people's levels of You don't have to prove what you're a fan of to anybody in this world.
Yeah, if you like it,
there's
like
no credential cards. It's not an RPG that you earn these cards and you show them as proof. Yeah, I am definitely a fan. I'm not a bandwagon. You don't have to prove that to anybody for your own personal enjoyment.
I could agree with that. That's the way that people act, but a lot of times, and it's so stupid.
And that hurts building the community and bringing in.
Yep. To give you an example, when I went to Raw this past, whenever it was, Raw before SummerSlam, we were sitting, we weren't on the floor, but we were in the balcony section. We were in the second row of the balcony section, which actually was better than being on the floor unless you were in the first two or three rows because you could see down over everything. Or not balcony, but like we were literally the first, we were in the second row of the bleachers where they first started. And there was a group of guys in front of us that were, you know, the super smart know-it-all wrestling fans, the people who understood, quote unquote,
statistical.
Yeah. And then there were two people behind us that were the still real to me people. Okay. And the people who thought it was real were way less annoying than the hardcore fans. Because to me, I love that people love wrestling. And if somebody, if I'm starting a conversation and about wrestling and right off the bat I can tell it's somebody who still thinks it's real, I don't belittle them.
You don't tell them that Santa is fake. You say, I like wrestling too.
I'll even say, you know, if they're like, oh, well, I can't believe this happened to this guy, instead of being like, you know, saying something stupid, I'll just be like, yeah, you know, maybe next time he'll get him. He's a tough guy, whatever, you know. Because, you know, who's it? But these guys were like really wanting people to know that they knew it was scripted and that they knew, you know. And it was so annoying. And I was like, man, I hope in my life of talking about wrestling, I hope I've never come off like that. Because I do know a lot about wrestling and I read about wrestling and I know people who are wrestlers. And I've been to shows and I've been in locker rooms before it goes live. So I see them go over scripts and stuff. I've seen all this stuff. That doesn't make me a smarter person. I may know a little bit more of how it's ran than some people, but that doesn't, like, I hope that it's never come off that way, because I don't, like, to me, that's a deterrent. Why would anybody continue to watch something if you're going to belittle them about it? Like, I don't know. Hopefully I've never come off that way to anybody, because it's just such a, it's a, such a stupid mentality.
Right.
Oh, you don't know that in the Silmarillion on page 48, Legolas, I don't know, this is completely wrong, somebody will crucify me for that, but you didn't know that this guy said this to so-and-so? Like, no, because I just casually enjoy the stuff.
Right.
Which, fortunately, none of my friends are like that. I've never had anybody speak negatively towards me. I've got a bunch of friends who are massive Star Wars fans, like, read all the books, and they'll talk about stuff that's canon or not canon, but it's never been... they've never been negative. I'll say something, they're like, oh, well, you know, in the book it says this, so that's a little bit of an explanation. I'm like, oh, okay, cool, that makes sense. But man, it's just, fan bases are the worst of any, like,
we nerds need to do better. We need to do better to be more human about it all and less calculated, less robotic.
Yeah.
And yeah, you're right. You're very right.
Hopefully that'll change. I don't think it ever will, because everybody has this mentality that they want to know, and they knew about something before it ever happened. Before, you know, they knew about it before anybody else did. And I guess, I don't know, man. It's weird that the way people react. Because to me, if somebody's like, hey, I just found out about, I don't have anything right off, but you know, oh, I just found out about this. If somebody came to me and they're like, what is the Shenmue game? I'd be like, buy the crap out of it. It's awesome. Like, I wouldn't be like, I can't believe you've never heard of this. The Dreamcast is so amazing. You're a blasphemy to gamers.
You don't want to scold somebody just for asking what is Shenmue.
Yep.
Because it flew under a lot of radars, honestly.
Yep.
So I have a really good friend. It's the guy that used to sell me games at the Babbage's that turn into a GameStop that I would shop at in Louisiana, in my actual hometown I'm from.
Uh-huh.
and he's an artist. He's got a Facebook page. He does commission art. He's really good at it. I think it's called Rogue Art Gallery. His stuff is amazing. I'll send you a link later so you can look.
Yeah,
you'll probably want him to commission something because he's so good.
Send it to me. I'll check it out.
He's in Gamers, but his name's Jesse. And I remember he was very, very devoted PlayStation fan. He had PlayStation 1. He was eagerly waiting for the 2 to drop. Shenmue was very, very enticing. He almost bought a Dreamcast for it. Decided not to. Got the PS2 at launch and then was happy with the level of Square. He was a Square Enix guy. You know, he loved RPGs. And he had enough on the PlayStation 1 to hold him over and skip the Dreamcast. But I remember him being the one that gave me my jewel case. You remember that the Dreamcast Shenmue was black instead of white?
Yep.
And it was a double case because it was two CDs. Or maybe even three.
It was three, and then there's a special edition that has four.
It was thick. Oh, the special. I didn't have that one. Just the standard. But the fact that the case was black, and he regularly asked me as the months went by how Shenmue was going, because I know it tickled his fancy. He really wanted to get it, but he was going to hang on to his money and just get his PS2 at launch. And then the Dreamcast failed, you know, a year after that.
Yeah, it's because they didn't put the DVD feature in it, man.
Sony was so smart with that.
They were, dude. They I'm actually looking up Shenmue. I want to make sure that I wasn't incorrect about the discs, but not that it matters. But no, I agree. Everybody wanted a DVD player, so Sony says we can eat profit, but sell consoles, and everybody was like, "Yep, that's a great idea."
And then they'll get the third party support, which they do.
And it doesn't say right off on Wikipedia. I thought it was three discs. I'm sure
it probably was. I think that sounds right.
It was a huge game.
Yeah, and then all the audio track, like, how much of each disc do you think? Because was Dreamcast actual CD-ROMs, or was it something before DVD, but bigger than a CD-ROM?
No, I think it was just standard CD-ROMs.
So imagine just the audio because of all the people's voices.
Yeah.
And then the soundtracks of, like, wildlife and the stuff playing in the background of the towns. And
Yeah, there's a lot going on. I don't know. I have a copy of it, but it's in a closet. I'll probably try
to check it. I love that about you, that so much of your child and teenagehood is still in your possession. It's like time capsules when you do get to them accidentally. They're like unplanned time capsules.
Yeah. Yep, which is awesome. I don't have a lot of stuff that I wish I still had, but I do still have a ton of stuff as well, so I'm fortunate for that. So that's super, super cool. So, well, I think, Harry, I'm probably going to end it there. Is there anything else you want to chat about before we end it up? Are you good there?
No, I feel it was a great convo. Again, thanks for the opportunity to come on, and I'm happy that you found a way to do YouTube again on your schedule.
Yeah, man. Oh, it's been awesome.
And look forward to watching this back later on after you upload it. And good luck on your future endeavors with this, wherever this podcast thing is taking you. I know you're going there. You're going to get there.
Yeah, it's a lot easier to do on this schedule than it will, like, kind of have, you know. I mean, I make my own schedule with it. It's not a thing that I have to stick to, so
adhered by, right?
Right. So but everybody can check out Harry on YouTube at Sandman PR Vlog. You can go check that out, which I'll have the links in the description. If you're listening to this on the podcast or like on iTunes or Google, I try to put stuff in the description, but I don't know how it comes through. But you can check out Harry on Sandman PR Vlog on YouTube.
It's a geek culture small channel. I try to put one video a week minimum, sometimes two. I'm by no means a professional tuber. I'm just this is a hobby.
Yep. Nothing wrong with that, man. Nothing wrong with that. So, but I am going to end the podcast there. Thanks, everybody, for watching, and we will see you guys in the next episode.